This is Morgan Michael, welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness, together by challenging our assumptions and venturing beyond the status quo in education. We can make a big impact, one small act at a time.
Creativity is just a fundamental, basic human impulse. It's right up there with our social nature, which is driven by, you know, evolution. So it's something that is just hardwired into who we are. Creativity is simply bringing something into the world that didn't exist until you brought it forth.
Scott Perry is the CEO of Creative on Purpose, which helps people like you see and step into the possibility in endeavors that make a difference. I met him as a coach on Seth Godin's Akimbo workshops and was struck by his generosity, his work ethic, and his ability to connect authentically. Scott believes that making things better requires leaning into challenges with curiosity, commitment, courage, and collaboration. In our conversation, we explore the notion that everyone has access to their own creativity and that we are better together. And finally, that great learning isn't exclusive to the classroom. You can find his books, courses, and work by typing Creative on Purpose in Google. Thanks for listening. Scott Perry, thank you so much for joining us today on Kindsight 101. I'm so excited to be speaking to you.
It's a pleasure to be here, Morgan, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Absolutely. So I just want to give a little background in terms of who you are. So Scott Perry is a husband, a coach, an author, a teacher, a father, and a musician from Floyd, Virginia. He believes that your life is enhanced most through the work that elevates other people. So you essentially help people to develop their ideas and their approaches so that they can make a difference. Can you just briefly talk about what that looks like in terms of how you serve other people on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. So Creative on Purpose is a blog and a broadcast and a community and a coaching program. So obviously the blog and the broadcast are free offerings, and anybody is welcome to glean whatever they can from the information that are shared on those two media. And then the community and the coaching program are just ways that I help people go deeper in this effort of flying higher and endeavors that make a difference. But the goal really in everything I do is to fulfill my mission, which is that I see a world where everyone is able to explore and develop their potential through fulfilling work that's done with the right people. And so everything I'm doing at Creative on Purpose is to direct people into that possibility.
I love that. And I think as an educator in the more traditional sense of the word, I'm obviously a teacher in the school system in Canada. And I just think that our approach to creativity is such an important one. And I think that truly to be a coach, to be somebody who propels people into their potential or enables them to reach those potentials, really, I mean, that's the role of a true teacher, a true leader. So when we think about creativity, I'd love to start really broad and just talk about what do you see creativity as? What is creativity and who are the creative people out there?
I think creativity is just a fundamental, basic human impulse. It's right up there with our social nature, which is driven by, you know, evolution. So it's something that is just hardwired into who we are, being social creatures. We have this capacity for reason. Doesn't mean we're always tapping into that capacity, but we have that ability, and it's a uniquely human enterprise. And then the third piece for me is creativity, which is the act of bringing change into the world. Creativity is simply bringing something into the world that didn't exist until you brought it forth. And that means that we're all creative beings. I think the sad thing is that, you know, there are surveys that show that worldwide, less than 50% of people will identify as creative beings. And the fact is that everything worthwhile that we've ever done in our lives from childhood on is tied to our creative instincts and intuition. when you were a baby and you wanted to become a talker, you had to employ your creative abilities to go from being a non-talker to being a talker. And along the way, you did a lot of bad talking, but that's the path that we all take in any creative endeavor. We have to do something poorly until we can do it well, and then we can decide which of those things that we want to excel and become masters in.
I love that. And I think there's often this belief, and I believe a lot of educators feel this way, that there are creative people and there are the others who aren't creative. And so many of them self-identify that way as, oh, I'm not creative, and they step aside, sort of leaving the stage for someone else to take over. And so I guess my question to you is, do you believe that, and I think I already know your answer, but do you believe that creativity is inherent? And then if it isn't, how do we find our way if we do identify as someone who is not creative? How do we find our way to a more creative lifestyle or life path?
Well, I think the thing that yes, we are all creative, and I think the thing that gets that over time we get in our own way about employing that creativity is we become creatures of the status quo. Human beings, in addition to being social by nature and able to use reason and rationality and able to employ our creative impulse, are also creatures of the status quo. We like to know where we stand and what's expected. And the creativity is really all about changing the status quo. And so, as we grow up and as adults, we tend to find excuses or find reasons to either ignore our creative instincts and impulses or to just forget about them in an effort to kind of fit in and to succeed in the ways that we've been taught to believe that success is manifested. So for me, a big part of the journey is to remind ourselves that we are creative beings, and then to get ourselves to take small steps into our creative potential so that we become just a little bit more comfortable and familiar with the process. And then we can start to focus on the things where we want to move from just being creative beings into leveling up to the level of artistry in specific endeavors that are we feel are worth our time and talent.
Okay, so kind of this idea of stepping into the dabbling and following your curiosity, perhaps, and then creating enough volume that you get to a place where there's a certain element of mastery in terms of your skill set. Is that sort of along that line of
Yeah,
thinking?
and you've just brilliantly, tapped into two of the things that are required for to do creativity well, which is you have to be curious, you have to let go of your certainties and your overconfidence in the way that things are or should be, and you have to start looking at things from different perspectives and angles, and then you have to have the character and the courage to actually lean into those possibilities and again decide which of those places you're going to invest what's required to become a master and to become a true artist in whatever particular endeavor you decide that you want to achieve mastery in.
Right. So I speaking of endeavor, you've written, I believe, three books, handbooks that enable people to step into that creativity. I'd love to talk about your concept of your book Endeavor. And you basically say it's not just a self-help book, it's a help others book. So talk to me about that tri Venn diagram of the Endeavor Better framework, and then how generosity plays a part in your own success or someone's success as they're trying to get to that creative place.
There's a friend of mine recently told me about this ancient Sanskrit word, and I don't recall what that word is, but it means ardent effort. And I think of that idea now as you know, being tied to this idea of an endeavor. An endeavor is an activity, work that matters, work that's worth it, work that is worthy of your investing your time and talent into. And an endeavor is always going to be something that is not just that, that's work done with and for the people that you care about. And so the Venn diagram that you're referring to is this process that I came to very early on in my thinking about, you know, what creative on purpose was going to be, as this, the place where you can find that work, the, an endeavor, the work that's done with and for the right people, that's helping make change happen, that's helping people step into possibility and step into the, that's going to make things better. And the Venn diagram is very simple. It's made up of who you are, what you're good at, and where you belong. And at the intersection of those three things is where you can find your next endeavor. Who you are, very simply defined, is what are your core values. What you're good at are your core talents, and those are more associated with your, you know, soft human skills as opposed to the hard skills that you learned in college or on the job. And then where you belong, you can think of it in terms of Seth Godin's idea of tribe, but it's, I think of it as people that share your values but need your talents to enhance their lives. And again, if you picture those three things overlapping, the bullseye or the center of that Venn diagram is where you can start to find the work that you're meant to do now, and you can start investing in what's necessary to do that work well.
Awesome. And it kind of makes me think of that. I believe it's a Japanese term, ikagi, and it's sort of finding that perfect state of flow and just basically your purpose and creativity colliding, right? And it sounds as though, yeah, the who you are, the values, the what you're good at, which is what skill set do you sort of bring into the world that makes you unique? And then, of course, your belonging, your sense of belonging, it's tapping into that community. And I think we need, I mean, that really tunes into our emotional needs as well. What do you say to somebody who wants to be creative, is sort of on the beginning first steps of their journey into accepting themselves as a creative person, and maybe there's this pressure from the outside world to have their creativity pay their bills right out the gate, and that signals success. What would you say to somebody who has that sort of paradigm running through their head?
My background is that for 35 years I made a living as a performing musician, so I did make my creative enterprise also my livelihood. And in retrospect, I think that I would probably do things differently if I was back there at the beginning of that journey now, just because although I was very lucky and I got to play the music that I wanted to play, and I got to play it with and for the people in the places that I wanted to play it, there are a lot of bad decisions and possible decisions that are really out of alignment with who you really are and what you really believe are made when you have the urgency of having to make a living from your creative enterprise. And so since then, I have really thought about creative endeavors as being the work that you get to do, and that it's okay to have the work that you have to do fund the work that you get to do. In other words, to have it, what we would call in the music business, a day gig or a day job, where you're taking care of your responsibilities and paying your bills through the work that you have to do, whatever that is. And then on the side, you get to do this other work that you get to do, and you get to do it without the urgency and the pressure of having to make it pay. Because I think nothing really gets in the way of your best work more than trying to make it pay off in whatever way you're trying to get paid too early.
Beautifully said. And I think that's so great for people to hear. And I hear it through two lenses. I hear it as an educator. So I think a lot of teachers enjoy their job, but then some people also feel a pull or a calling to other passions. And then sometimes it can be tricky to balance both. So knowing that you don't have to give one up in order to do the other, we have lots of hours after work where we're able to dive into some of those passions. And then the second piece is I look at it through the lens of a high school student heading out into the workforce, feeling the immense pressure of having to commit to a particular career or, you know, to choose a program in university that will inevitably probably not get them a job the way that things are these days. And so I think there's something very liberating about that message. I am curious, Scott, what you were like as a student. Did you enjoy school? Did you feel connected? How did you feel kind of heading out into the workforce after having been through the system?
I was really, really lucky. As a young student, I was not a very good student, and I was a little bit of a, I guess my parents would have described me as a juvenile delinquent, and you know, one of the reasons that I think that was my, you know, my dad was in the service and then he worked for the telephone company and we moved around a lot. So I changed schools very frequently. But at a certain point, you know, my parents realized that I was not heading in a very promising direction. And it's just so happened that there was a small private school in the town that we were living in at the time and that the headmaster lived across the street. And my dad, in desperation, actually went over one day and just said, "Can you help us? You know, our son needs to, you know, get his act together. And we think that your school is a place where he can do that." And the headmaster took a liking to me and provided some scholarship, you know, found some scholarship money. And I was able to go to this private school as a day student. And I discovered then beginning in the seventh grade and on through high school and college that I was, that I loved learning. I wasn't always the best student in terms of GPA, but I was always a very dedicated and invested learner. And I loved learning just for its own sake, you know, over time. And so I actually loved it so much that I became a school teacher when I first graduated from college.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Okay. So I actually began my career as a teacher at private schools, the names of which some people would probably recognize.
Right.
And then I discovered that even though I was teaching at prestigious institutions, that, you know, there's a lot more involved in teaching in an institution than just standing up in front of a room full of kids and, you know, inspiring and informing their educational journey. And I was not able to find the balance between those two things. So I eventually left, you know, that kind of formal education, formal teaching. But I've been a teacher all my life. I was a teacher from the bandstand as a musician. I've been a guitar, owned a and operated a guitar studio for 20 years now. So I am heavily invested in the idea of learning and more importantly, learning by doing.
Awesome. How would you say that your own experience going from sort of maybe a struggling, quote, delinquent student to someone who really recognized the love of learning, how would you say that that journey has informed the way that you interact with learners, whether adult or children or perhaps, you know, your own family?
One of the things that I share with all of my students and, you know, with my children, my own children, and with other, really anybody that I'm speaking to through Creative on Purpose, is that it's important to understand what is and what is not within our control. We do not, although we tend to believe that all the goodness in our life is a result of our hard work and brilliance, most every result or outcome that we experience is completely outside of our control. It may be a result, a little bit of the influence that we have, but we ultimately only control two things. We control how we frame our situation and circumstances, and through that framing, we can unpack the possibilities and the choices that we have, and then we can choose the next step and take the next step. And that's as far as our control goes. And so, therefore, I'm a big believer in the lesson of the Bhagavad Gita, which is you are entitled to your labor, but you are not entitled to the fruits of your labor, which is, to me, just another way of saying the effort or the journey itself is the reward, not whatever fame or fortune comes from those efforts. And so for me, I just like to encourage people to focus on the work itself, because if you invest yourself in any enterprise, the work that's right in front of you, the person right in front of you, purpose and passion will come as a result of doing that meaningful work. It's not necessarily inherent in any of the tasks or jobs that we do. You know, people that go into law or medicine sometimes feel like that those kind of professions will give them meaning. And oftentimes I speak to lawyers and doctors who, you know, are regret that they got into that enterprise, but feel that they are kind of stuck in it because they've invested so much time, money, and effort into doing it.
The sunk costs.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so I think it's just, you know, you can find purpose and passion, or purpose and passion will be cultivated in whatever job, hobby, vocation, career that you invest yourself fully in. And as long as you're doing that with intention and integrity.
Love that. I know Stoicism has been quite a strong influencer in your life. Can you, for our listeners who perhaps aren't familiar with what Stoicism is, can you nutshell it for us and then just talk a little bit about, because I'm hearing a little bit of that in your outlook on the things we can control versus those that we can't. Can you talk about that a little bit, your influence the influence of Stoicism on your life?
So Stoicism is an ancient Hellenistic philosophy begun in ancient Greece, but then really came to its greatest popularity in ancient Rome just before the advent of Christianity, which actually kind of just took on a lot of the Stoic principles and put them into a new, or fashioned them into something new. But Stoicism, the philosophy with a capital S, is very different than the common usage Stoicism with a small s, which is usually associated with just grimly enduring all of life's hardships. Stoicism is a philosophy that taught and provided tools for achieving tranquility, equanimity, and a sense of flourishing and happiness, regardless of what was going on in your life. So whether you were being celebrated as a hero, or, you know, in the case of Marcus Aurelius, the emperor of Rome, or if you were Epictetus, who began his journey as a slave, it is possible to experience a greater sense of flourishing and thriving and happiness by accepting and acknowledging our social nature, employing our capacity for reason, and recognizing what I said earlier, which comes directly from the teachings of Epictetus, that there are only two things within your control: your mindset and your decisions and actions.
Beautifully said. Thank you. I know we got a few minutes left, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about some actionable steps that you would sort of start with while you're coaching someone who is feeling the urge to start a new initiative, or feeling the pull to write a new book, or, you know, that creative calling that we all get. I mean, perhaps not all of us get. Sometimes it's more of a whisper, right? And it's hard to identify. But when you are helping someone to step into that potential, what are some key questions or strategies or steps that you might take them through to help them clarify and really reach out for that goal?
I think it's important to have an end in mind. I encourage the people that I work with in my community and as a coach to define what success looks like, and at the same time to accept that it's unlikely that that's where they end up. I learned very early on that it's important to have an aim or a goal or a vision, but when you set that intention, you cannot possibly know about all the challenges and obstacles that are ahead, and you also equally can't know what are the opportunities and possibilities that will come your way. And so I believe in approaching your endeavor, whatever that is, as a series of the smallest possible steps into the possibility that you're aiming towards. And that as you take each small step, it's important to, after you take the step, to pause, pay attention to what happened, revise, iterate, improve your choices for what you're going to do next, and to continue that process. And that way, even though you may not end up precisely where you intended to end up, you'll always end up somewhere great. And again, just to reference my love for Stoic philosophy, the Stoics would say that you will end up where destiny or fate intended.
I like that. And I think back to that whole idea that we don't necessarily, I think it was Steve Jobs who said, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backward. And I just think it's kind of become, one of those things that people say, but when you do really think about it, you kind of have to let go of that very clear roadmap. You don't know how you're necessarily going to get to where you need to go. And sometimes it feels like you're veering off the path, but there's something. Just the fact that you've written it down or you've put it there as a clear intention directs you in even a subconscious way to where you want to go, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So before we head into those rapid fires, I want to ask you just two more questions. So I know you've talked a little bit about the difference between character and reputation, and I just think that's such an important concept, especially in this age of social media. So, as you are creating, as you're doing your work, sometimes it can be easy to conflate the two. Can you distinguish the difference between character and reputation and how that might apply to your work?
I think it's a John Wooden quote that I'll not get precisely right, but he says character is who you really are, and reputation is who other people think you are. And I think what you're referencing in terms of my own writing is that it's possible for your character and your reputation to rhyme if you are showing up consistently, deliberately, with intention and with integrity where you belong and doing the work that you're meant to do with the people that you care about every single day. And I think that character is, was something very, very important to people in the ancient world. It doesn't appear, it's not something that we teach now in schools, at least in the United States. But it is the most important thing because it is what actually defines you. Who you are is a function of, not just what you believe, but the way that you live those beliefs in the world and the way that you live them through the work that you do. And so character is one of those things that, again, one of the few things that is within our control because it's defined by our mindset and it's defined by our choices and our actions.
Beautiful. So on to the rapid fire. Is there anything that you'd like to add before we do those questions?
No, you asked really fantastic questions, and yeah, I think we've covered a lot of ground in a very short period of time.
Thank you, Scott. So my first question, which is not a question I often ask, but I know that you're a voracious reader. What are one or two titles that you would recommend teachers read that would either expand their own minds and their own self-awareness, or that might help them interact with others in a more effective way?
I'm a big believer, you know, Stoicism is, you've mentioned, is, you know, something that's gaining in popularity. It's obviously very popular in the Silicon Valley now, and there's several books out about the relevance of Stoic philosophy now. But I've always believed that going straight to the source is the best way to learn anything. And I think that Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, which is one of the three most popular existent works from the ancient world on Stoic philosophy, is a very approachable and very useful set of principles that anybody can use as a guide for living the good life and living a life that is well lived. And there's a lot in there about the importance of this idea of doing work with and for other people. And I think, you know, that's what teachers are doing when they're doing their job at their best. They're doing work that is intended to be done with and for their students, to help them realize their potential and deliver on their promise.
Beautiful. What does kindness mean to you in a few words or less?
Kindness is, it's obviously crucial to our sense of well-being and happiness. And like anything that we learn it through practicing it with and for others, but we can't really completely embody the idea of kindness unless we're able to practice it with ourselves, with and on ourselves as well. And I think, you know, that's the biggest challenge, because we are often our own worst critics, if not our own worst enemies, and we often are speaking to ourselves with a lack of kindness that we would never in a million years practice in our conversations with other people. So I think it's both an internal and an external practice that we need to embrace fully every day.
What one skill or superpower does an educator need to lead with in order to be effective?
Well, you touched on curiosity. I think that's a really important one. And if I was given permission to give two answers in addition to curiosity, I'd say gratitude. Mm-hmm. It's the idea that teaching is the work that we get to do. And you get to be a teacher whether or not you hold a teaching certificate or stand in front of a classroom of students every day. You are, every single one of us is a teacher, whether we want to be or not, and that it's really through our actions and the way that we are in the world that we are teaching others.
I like that a lot. I think that's a really important point. And I think what it highlights too is that we have a fair amount of responsibility within every interaction that we have. So I think that's a good point.
Yeah, well said.
So finally, what one message or quote would you print on one of those quote cups that could be sold in bookstores around the world?
Well, my favorite quote of all time is one that comes from Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. And it's, "Love the humble art that you have learned and take rest in it." So obviously there's a theme of education and gratitude and kindness and the idea of intention and meaningful living is all baked into just those few simple words.
Great. Where can people find you online and otherwise?
I am very easy to find online. It used to be that you could put in Scott Perry and I would show up, but then there's now a congressman from Pennsylvania named Scott Perry and a famous basketball coach named Scott Perry, and it seems that musicians and creatives cannot compete with a Google search with basketball players and politicians. However, if you type in creative on purpose or go to creativeonpurpose.com, you'll be able to find me right away and connect with me there.
Wonderful. And I know your books are available on Amazon as well, and at the Kindle and all of that, and all clickable through your website. So I will definitely be putting that in the show notes. Scott Perry, what a delight. This has been so wonderful, very informative and inspiring. So thank you so much for joining me on Kindsight 101 this morning.
Well, thank you for not only having me on and for the brilliant conversation, but just for the force of good and all that you're doing to make things better by making a better thing, which is this podcast and all the other great work that you do.
Thank you so much. I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes and leave a review. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag smallactbigimpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.